Today's guest is Elizabeth Adalian, who has worked as a volunteer homeopath in former war-torn countries such as Croatia and Bosnia. It was during this time that Elizabeth made the sudden realization while taking a patient's case history that the main influence upon the case was not so much what the patient endured as a result of the war, but what they brought to that suffering from their years of infancy and childhood. Elizabeth wrote a book called Touching Base with Trauma, Reaching Across the Generations, a three-dimensional homeopathic perspective. Elizabeth has also contributed to a homeopathic team supporting victims of the Grenfell fire, which she describes as a very inspiring experience. If you wish to purchase a copy of Elizabeth's book, you can purchase this through my Amazon affiliate link, which is in the show notes. This means that I'll get a small kickback, which will help to pay for the costs of producing and editing this show. To find out more about Elizabeth's work, visit www.adalian.uk. That's adalian.uk. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to the Homeopathy Hangout, where we discuss all things homeopathy from around the world. And now my mum and your host, Eugenie Kruger.
Hello, homies, and a very warm welcome to Homeopathy Hangouts. Today, we get to hang out with Elizabeth Adalian in the UK. Welcome to the show, Elizabeth.
Well, thank you very much. It's a privilege.
I'm really excited to talk about your book, Touching Base with Trauma, Reaching Across the Generations, because trauma is just front, rear, center, top, bottom, everywhere. It just seems that every second conversation is about trauma. So I feel like today's episode is just really spot on. But before we get into all the juicy good stuff, can you tell us a little bit about how you were first introduced to homeopathy?
Well, that's very interesting because I have a daughter who has now got her own children. And it happened that she became ill in the night. And she was convulsing. She must have been under 2 years of age. But by the morning, she was fine. So I went into my area to the local GP and he gave me antibiotics. And I just said, nah, this is not going to be the trick. So I went to a local health shop where I knew someone. And he said, well, there's a homeopath around the corner. I didn't even know what homeopathy was. And the first question the homeopath asked me was, well, what was she eating the night before? And I said, well, actually, her older brother was making ice pops and she was standing on a chair by the freezer helping herself. I said, that's the clue. And from then on, I was sold. I just thought, this touches the spot. And we never looked back, really, she nor any family members.
Wow. And then how did you make that leap then into studying to become a homeopath yourself?
Well, I bought the book by George Vizulkas, Medicine of the New Man, and I just thought, wow, this just satisfies every aspect of my interest. And I went ahead and got the book, and then I explored it and thought, this is for me. And I found a college, and I pursued it.
It's amazing. How lucky are your children to grow up with a homeopath mum, hey?
Well, yes, exactly.
Amazing. I just wonder, I don't know how people do life without homeopathy, especially if you've got little children. Hey, can you imagine raising your kids without homeopathy?
Well, exactly. Everything is pathologized these days, whether it's menopause, puberty, whatever. Mm. And I feel that
childbirth,
homeopathy is so wholesome. Mm. We don't need those labels.
Exactly. So talk to us a little bit about your book. So it's called Touching Base with Trauma, Reaching Across the Generations, a three-dimensional homeopathic perspective.
Well, why? This is the book.
Beautiful. Who designed your cover for you?
It was a company called Writer's World.
Okay.
They took on the book, although it's self-published. Mm. And I found the artist beyond artists. And I was so happy. He gave me some choices. And this was the one. I like the colours. I like the descriptions. And I think it speaks. So I went for that cover.
Mm, it's beautiful. Why this book? Why did you feel the need to write this?
Well, it's really interesting you asked me, because I didn't know why I was writing a book. I really didn't know. I wasn't ambitious to write a book. It wasn't in my consciousness. And I used to work as a volunteer in former war-torn countries like Croatia and Cyprus. And one day after my returns from Croatia, I was standing in this house in the corridor outside this room. And I suddenly had this realization. It was just something else for me. This is nothing to do with war. This is about their early life. what they bring to the experience from their original trauma. Mm. And this was repeated time and time again. And then I thought, you know what? We've all got our own trauma. We all enter an unresolved field, whether it's to do with trauma itself, battle or abuse, etc., or it could be a drug lair, it could be any kind of influence. And I thought, this is very compelling. And at the same time, there was a lot of awareness coming onto the horizon about epigenetics and neuroscience. I thought, this marries very well. I need to combine. And I'm still so immersed in the field because since the book came out in 2017, there's so much more awareness about the links between early life and gestational life, early life in the womb, what goes before in the parents' life and the ancestors. And that's really what put me on my path.
Mm. And I know a lot of homeopaths that I've had on the show that have written books have said it's taken them years to write a book. How long did it take you to do this? And what was the journey of writing this book?
The journey was interesting because it took me 6 years, actually.
Wow.
When the sixth year came, I had an ultimatum from my family and they said, look, it's either the book or us. And I said, you know what? It's you. Mm. And I put a full stop and I threw the manuscript at them and said, it's done. And ever since that day, I never really wanted to add, although, of course, now I've moved on to other fields, perpetuating that path. It's not to do with this original book in the context which how it exists now.
Mm. I've got this book in my head that I've wanted to write for many years. And I think that's also why whenever I have authors on the show, I'm always so interested in that process. But there's something very brave about publishing a book because it's not like online media where if you change your mind or ideas about something, you can go in and change that. So it would be easy to have like analysis paralysis where you're just sitting there and not actually publishing the book because once it's out there forever. So,
well, exactly. And I think in my understanding, some people were not ready take on board the contents. But as we've gone through the pandemic and other challenges, put it like that, people are beginning to realize that trauma may not be out there, but trauma's within us. And I think that's the word, as you were saying about the word, it's everywhere. But trauma is the original wound. It means wound in Greek. And a wound is something that can be picked off and returns, and the scab is always there. And as we go through life and go on repeating the original trauma, unconsciously, of course, that wound gets bigger and bigger and more distorted. And that's what I'd like to talk about. So we have events, and there are many, which are traumatizing, but actually they tap in, whatever they are, to the original trauma. And that's what we have to work through in order to understand ourselves and how we operate in the world and resist the influences which are coming at us so much of the time.
And when you say like transgenerational trauma, how do you even go about identifying that in a consultation or how
Well, you know what? That's a very interesting question because when we're taught homeopathy, we learn to ask about family illness. And of course, family illness is very vital, but often it's rooted in that early trauma. When we initially see patients, we can't always say, well, is there any family trauma? But as we get to know them and we look at their body language and we look at their eye contact, we understand through the nuances that there's a lot more than meets the eye. And then we can introduce them to this idea. For example, anorexia, bulimia may not be about the lived life of the presenting patient. It may be to do with their grandparent or their great-grandparent was caught up in a famine in one of the world wars and had to exist on the run. How are you going to solve that if you just deal with what you see and what you get? It's a matter of delving. And sometimes we don't get that chance to reach that point in the interview.
Some of the ways that I've started seeing it in the clinic and also from doing some of Colin Griffith's seminar to do with, you know, transgenerational trauma is whenever I have multi-generations in the clinic, I have one family in particular that I'm thinking of where it was the grandmother that immigrated to Australia in very traumatic circumstances from Europe. And so I treat the grandmother and her daughter and her granddaughter.
Oh gosh, that's so valid.
Is magical, because you can just see the things that the mum and the granddaughter are presenting is just all from that original trauma from that grandmother.
Well, you know, it's so true what you say, because what set me on the path, and you've now reminded me, beyond my work in former war-torn countries, was at a clinic in London where a boy presented. He was about 8 or 9. In fact, I've written about him in the book. And he became paralyzed in his own house for no obvious reason. And he had all the evident remedies like stramonium, mancinella. And then one day the mother said, you know what? This is not about him. I just know it's about my husband. But he's not going to be able to reconcile that connection. But you know what? He's got hay fever. So he came with hay fever. And it transpired exactly as you described the lady who came from Europe, that the very age at which this boy was at, he was chucked out of his country of origin and had never, ever spoken about it. So the cellular memory persists through the generations. And what a release for the whole family. And in fact, the younger brother came on board for treatment because the mother thought maybe that would be a good. And you know what? He's the only patient I've probably ever seen who didn't need a remedy. He was so robust. So it shows our vulnerability goes back. It can even be different within twins who share the same sac.
That's interesting.
So I'm fascinated by the whole issue of epigenetics.
What about epigenetics, and in what sort of way do you use that to inform your prescribing?
I learned that over 90% of illness is influenced by epigenetics and not by the DNA. That means that it becomes attached to the DNA, but it also means that it can be removed very easily. So isn't that a wonderful opportunity for homeopathy? It's a matter of pinpointing and identifying that particular issue. So you need a lot of insight and sensitivity. But of course, in my case, I'm lucky because people know about my work. So a lot of them approach me because they want to do the journey. For them, it's a journey. And just talking in the interview can be healing in itself. And in fact, I had a student who read the book on a flight from London to Berlin. And he said to me, you know what, by the time I arrived in Berlin, I'd solved my own case through reading the book. I didn't need a remedy. I made the connection.
Aww.
So for me, it's putting out a feeler for people to change their perspective, not way beyond homeopathy itself.
Now, the timing of your book was quite good. Being released in 2017, you would have never been able to conceive what was to happen in the next couple of years to come. Now, what about the word trauma? Like, it's such a buzzword. Do you feel that your idea of the word trauma or feelings around the word has changed since writing the book and since COVID and since using what you've written about in your clinic?
I would say no. But I would say that there's a misjudgment in using the word trauma for the events out there. I would say they're traumatizing. But I had patients during COVID who were actually ecstatic. They thought it was wonderful because they could work from home. They didn't want to see people anyway. So it just reinforced everything they wanted in their lives. So it's very subjective. What can be negative for us might not be for the next person.
Yeah, I had a great time in COVID because so many people were turning to homeopathy. It was like all my dreams come true. So.
Yes, exactly. We became like hairdressers, didn't we?
And I have no issues with standing up in the crowd. So I was the one person walking around town without a mask on. And I say that now quite cocky, but at the time it was a little bit scary, but it was my opportunity to stand out and show my children that it's okay to stand out. And so I feel it was such a valuable life lesson that, you know, it's like a once in a lifetime opportunity to stand out. Like,
yeah.
I always think so many of us might have lots to say about what happened in the World War. You know, people going to the gas chambers, and a lot of us think, I would be that one person that would run away. I wouldn't stand in the line. But then it's easy to say that, but you don't know how you would actually react. Now, I feel like COVID kind of was our opportunity to kind of show how would you react really in a situation like that. If you're somebody that's fascinated in human nature, like us homeopaths, COVID was such an interesting study ground of human nature. It was fascinating. It was really fascinating.
Yes, I agree. And having said that, I would say that actually it's about the immune system, isn't it? But the immune system is very tied up with the microbiome. And the microbiome has also come into the fore, and the serotonin and the other neurotransmitters.
Gut-brain connection.
Yes, which gather there. So I think that microbiome is a very important part of study too. And looking at the digestion and how much that has been affected. So many people now have digestive disorders. And it almost goes without saying. And we see with children who are born on the spectrum, I don't like to use the word autism, but who are not neurotypical, that most of them have gut problems. And often you can address their cognitive issues through the gut, through addressing the gut as the first port of call. So I think that there's a lot that has come to the fore. And what about the vagus nerve? What about the vagus nerve? I almost feel like the vagus nerve is the vital force, because it wanders, it goes from the gut to the brain, it goes from the heart to the gut. But most of the messages come from the gut. But of course, Hahnemann wouldn't have known about the vagus nerve. He wouldn't have known about the microbiome, but it's our duty to put it out there and say, let's address issues of the gut and just see what improves on the brain level. It's extraordinary, extraordinary. So we are at the cutting edge. We're definitely the cutting edge of everything that's out there, but we need to gather it. We need to bring it on board and dispel it and expel it and infuse other homeopaths to understand how much they can embrace these ideas within their practice.
Have you got any particular remedies in your clinic that you have really enjoyed using for trauma, and especially transgenerational trauma? I'd be really intrigued to hear what you say about that.
Well, it's fascinating you say that, because one of the things I was thinking about when you were saying about COVID, and I cannot speak for other people, but I speak for myself, and I can honestly say that it opened up a chasm in me which I hadn't recognized before, because it was a realization that the world had changed. And it wasn't the safe place we all thought it was. We didn't really know what to believe, obviously, and we still don't. So there's a lot of grey area around it. But one of the remedies that came on board for me, in fact, I wrote one of my blogs or set of articles about it, was plutonium. So when I read about plutonium in the Materia Medica, I thought, gosh, that's an extreme remedy. But actually, after COVID, I found many patients, including myself at one point, were expressing symptoms of plutonium. Plutonium, hellebores, picric acid was a great one. Picric acid, I liked COVID. In fact, I wrote extensively about it. It's because it's very much about burnout, but it's personal burnout. But this COVID experience burnt us all out. And this was translated into the picric acid picture on so many levels, and even affected the cognitive sphere. So patients who've altered as a result of COVID, picric acid can really bring them back to themselves through the brain. But we don't know so much about that remedy, but now it's out there, definitely out there, I think.
That's funny, Elizabeth. It's funny and it's not, because I have never prescribed picric acid in my life, but just before my interviews today, I listened to a half an hour lecture on YouTube by Saptarshi Banerjee on 6 remedies for migraines, and picric acid was in there. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. It's a remedy I know nothing about. I clearly need to go learn more about it. And then you go and mention it now. So now I have to go and read up more about it.
Yes. Well, you'll see in my list of articles on my website, quite a lot of coverage of picric acid.
Okay.
And it's a fascinating remedy for premature senility, for Alzheimer's, which, of course, is coming to the fore. And with the degree of traumatization, we see so many more cases of on the spectrum. I see Alzheimer's memory loss very much on the spectrum. So we're seeing a lot more cases as a result of the distress. I think of babies born into a world of masks and lack of relatives around.
Oh my gosh, don't get me started on that. That was something that actually was probably the most traumatic for me of everything, is seeing parents putting masks on little babies. But also, these babies born in this world with masks around them, how are they supposed to, I mean, there's going to be this whole massive scourge of speech disorders and cognitive issues of all these children born in this time when the most important time of their life, when they're supposed to see your lips move, they're supposed to get their social cues from the people around them, and that they are being denied that.
I dedicated myself to this whole phenomenon, and all my articles after COVID were around this. And now I'm planning to put it together. In fact, I have a colleague who's immersed in the field of climate change who's coming on board with me, and we're going to write about this.
Beautiful.
In the context, the broader context of sustainability, but looking at homeopathy going forward and seeing how we can revive these remedies, which are very much buried in the archives, but have got so much application. There are new remedies out there, but for me, they're not anchored. But these remedies are very much anchored within a theme, and we can translate that theme into what we understand about homeopathic principles, so we never come away from the basic principles.
So why do you say that about the new remedies? I mean, there's so many out there at the moment.
Well, there are, and I feel it's a bit like a dartboard. You're aiming the dart in the middle of the board, but where's the context? Where's the related remedy? Where's the miasm? And where do you take it from there? I mean, there are wonderful remedies like lacumanum, the remedy made from mother's milk. A fantastic remedy. Scorpion, I think, is a fantastic remedy. But also scorpion has been put in the context of miasms and related remedies. But for me, they're great, and they probably work well. But where do you take it from there? Where do you embed them? I think it's important to understand the old remedies and bring them into a modern context. That's what I would like to say. Rather than denigrate new remedies, because a lot of people rely on them and think they're great. So,
And what about, like, have you found that your book is more popular in some countries than others? Like, I would imagine that places with, you know, Europe, I can imagine with, you know, history of wars and things like that, it would have probably done quite well there, rather perhaps in a newer country. I'm completely making this up. I'm just throwing the question out there. Have you noticed that in some places it does better than others?
It's very interesting, isn't it? Because I think that in my eyes, it's areas where people are more individuated. There are cultures which are more collective, but I found, particularly in England, for example, there's an area in the West Country called Bristol, which is an area where obviously a lot of people are born and live, but it's also an area where people choose to go and live because there is that alternative lifestyle. So I've attracted quite a lot of patients from Bristol, and they're all part of one community. But interestingly, South Korea has come on board.
Oh, really?
Yes, yes. And areas like Japan, where homeopathy is established anywhere, and I've done quite a lot of work with Japanese students, so they know my work. But it is interesting, and I'm now going to go and work in Italy with a yoga teacher who's running a retreat, and he wants to introduce his students to homeopathy. He's also trained in homeopathy. So we're going to have a dialogue there and bring homeopathy very much into this realization. Of course, we're going to share the principles, but understanding homeopathy within this modern context.
Oh, that sounds amazing. And like a great excuse to go to Italy. Why wouldn't you?
Well, exactly.
Oh, that's incredible. So you just mentioned about yoga. Are there any other sort of modalities that helped you to write this? Or do you draw from any other sort of modalities to make up your worldview on trauma? Or is it mostly just...
Well, it's very interesting because I come from a medical family. Well, I come from a writing family and a medical family, which is a good marriage. But I've never really been given the chance to use my writing or to be seen as a writer. And in fact, this is about homeopathy. It's not about writing, but this was much more about literature in my family and autobiography. But my father was a surgeon, so I was very lucky that when he was alive, and I miss him dearly, I could always pick up the phone. Even if I was working in Turkey, I'd ring him from Istanbul and say, hey, what would you do about this? Aww. And sometimes I even find myself so many years later going to the phone and thinking, no, he's not there. And my mother was a psychotherapist, so I had that mix.
Oh, wow.
So, yes, so I come from quite an intellectual family, but I was very, what can I say, humbled as a child because there was so much fame around my family, and I just felt quite insignificant, and I never excelled in school. There's quite a lot of family trauma, no doubt. Mm. Otherwise, I wouldn't have written the book. I only really became interested in academia much later in life, and through homeopathy, I guess.
Amazing. Wow, that's really interesting. What a background. It sounds like you've got, had the foundations laid there for doing what you've decided to do.
Yes, well, maybe. Well, it's funny because the first time I introduced my book to a group who knew me, at the end of the session, I asked them to ask me questions. And one of them said, "Well, what's your trauma?" I was like, "Me? Trauma?" It was very interesting. And I was put on the spot, and I did share something with them because I knew them.
Mm.
But of course, we've all got our trauma, and we all need to own it, and we need to revive it and work with it and wrestle with it and refine our way in the world and susceptibility or vulnerabilities.
Mm. And you mentioned about trauma and like events being traumatizing and wounds that scab over and the scab comes off and there's, you know, possibly another, you know, maybe that scab wasn't enough and maybe it starts rewounding. Maybe it opens up and there's some more blood or pus or whatever that comes up. Do you think homeopathy can actually completely clear traumas, or is it just kind of making you okay with it and helping you to live with it, or is it suppressing it? I'm being devil's advocate here, by the way. Sometimes traumas are so big. So for example, the ultimate, which I don't even want to say it out loud because I don't know that I could ever get over something happening to my children passing away. Like when I hear these stories, I'm like, how do those people carry on? Because that is like one trauma that I would never be able to get over. So why do you, even just talking about it out loud, I don't even want to say it because, you know, my children are my everything. So can you use homeopathy to actually ever get over a trauma like that? Or will it just always be this wound?
It's interesting you say it, but there's somebody called Viktor Frankl who survived the Holocaust.
Ah, yes.
But not only did he survive the Holocaust, but he was subject to observing his whole family and friends wiped out. And he made a decision, and he decided that he was going to still live his life. And I think he's written a book, which is quite a seminal book. I think it's called Making Sense of Suffering, something like this. But he's a magical hero because he's exemplifying everything you're asking me. So I think if somebody like him, but the amount of work, I think he developed or he adopted a philosophy called Adlerian philosophy. And that was very much key to his recovery. But he thought, well, he could fight the enemy by not allowing them to get to him. Whatever they did, he would survive, but he would survive with meaning. I think it's about meaning. We need to find meaning in our lives. And I think homeopathy gives meaning. And for me, I could easily go and play golf or go bird watching. But for me, I just think I'm very much on a mission to understand and to bring homeopathy into this awareness and to run with it, because I feel that it's something that's not going to go away. The world won't suddenly revive in the way we would like.
Exactly. It is definitely a way of life. It's a way of looking at the world. It's a way of being. Like, it's not some, that sort of stuff, it's not something that you can ever get rid of or eliminate, because it's just, you know, you'd have to get rid of the human race to eliminate homeopathy.
It's about passion, isn't it? And also giving meaning and giving homeopathy a new life, and understanding that homeopathy is not just about fevers and cuts and bruises. But I think that's, for me, the key of it. Understanding homeopathy is life transforming. And I've even seen a man of 60 years of age who'd had years of therapy, and after one remedy, his life was changed. And he only needed one dose of one remedy. It was extraordinary for me. And yet he'd been in a group with other patients of mine who'd shifted and moved. But he was the one who stood up and said, wow. So we never quite know when we're going to hit the spot, or when they're going to respond, or he hit the spot.
Now, I think you might have possibly alluded to this before when you said that you've got a whole bunch of blogs and you, like, have you got any other book writing projects on mind? Are you going to turn those blogs into a book, or have you got anything else that you're planning on doing?
Well, yes, that's a good question. I mentioned my colleague Nigel Hargreaves, who's been a great support to me with this book and with my website, because I'm very, well, probably you're aware, I'm very technological. In fact, I miss my son in Australia because he used to be the one to help me with all that. But Nigel and I came to the conclusion that these blogs are so important that we need to put them in some cohesive form. Mm. And he would bring his expertise about climate change and sustainability to give the book more meaning beyond homeopathy for an audience out there and for them to embrace homeopathy in the field of trauma and traumatization and to distinguish between the two. So it's a very exciting project. We just need a publisher now. So if anybody would love to back us, we're here.
If anyone out there is listening, yeah, this is your chance.
Exactly. So,
Elizabeth, is there a final message that you want to leave our audience with, and where can they get hold of you?
I'd like to say that nothing is fixed, but we can change our construct, and that we need to look back. We need to touch base. It's about touching base, but also owning and embracing and working with. And I've always been very keen on sharing, obviously in a guarded way. But I think that sharing, and I think also it's a very exciting time to be alive. We're allowed to be vulnerable. We're allowed to show it. But it mustn't become our life, our whole life. We need to just dedicate ourselves to the journey, but just see where it leads. And it's amazing. It can move mountains. It really can. And I would love to help move mountains.
And how can people get hold of you and your book as well? Where's the best place to purchase your book from?
It's on Amazon. It's in hardback and softback and Kindle. I am open to doing seminars too and workshops. Yes, my website is adalian.uk. That's my surname. And the articles are there. There's also links to other teachings and stories about my work. Yes.
Amazing. Well, I have to go and find out who was the person that recommended to have you on the show. Somebody emailed me. They said, you have to get Elizabeth Adalian on the show. And I'm like, it's just been really lovely to get to speak with you and have you share this with us. And thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
It was Ren, actually. Somebody called Ren.
Oh, was it? It was Ren. That's right. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. She's a very generous human being. Thank you, Ren.
Oh, Ren, it's lovely. It was really nice to have her on the show. Yeah. Okay.
It was lovely
great.
To meet you. Yes.
Same.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for your time.
Pleasure, Eugene. Bye then.